and welcome to the Midday.
I'm Stephanie, and glad to have you back, Norman, by the way.
Glad to be back. Thank you for sailing single-handed for the last couple of weeks in my absence. And now just to make up for lost personnel, we've got an extra here.
We do, and that's Mike Lecrone. He's the director of the University of Wisconsin Marching Band and the Varsity Band. He has been in that position since 1969.
Was that some kind of a record? Welcome, by the way.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me on. And yes, I think I'm now the longest tenured band director in the history of the university. Ray Dvorak, a great, great band director before me, was here for 34 years, but I've gone a little bit past what Ray did. Never thought it would happen.
Well, I was going to go on and say that you created a whole new marching style and you focused on showmanship and then you established the Varsity Band. And you've been awarded all kinds of awards, including a Citation of Excellence by the National Band Association and Lifetime Achievement from the Wisconsin School Music Association. And you're here because the Varsity Band concerts are taking place 15th, 16th, and 17th.
That's this week.
That's right.
Thursday, Friday, and Saturday of this week, right.
At the Cole Center at 7:30 p.m. So we're going to be talking about band for the next half hour.
Space available in those 21,000 seats.
There is space available. Yes, that's right. We hope people will come and hear it because we'll guarantee an evening of music of all kinds. We've got every kind of music you could imagine.
Now, you're so used to playing outdoors. Well, I mean, obviously you play indoors quite a bit, too. Cole Center working out well?
Oh, it's a great venue for us. I mean, we used to play this concert in the field house, and I think there's still notes over there that are rumbling around in that building. But this is really quite good for us. I mean, we're such a large group. I mean, obviously when you put other kind of musical events in there, they have to amplify it extensively. But we're large enough that you're going to get acoustical sound, and it really works quite well for us.
When you often have some special guests, who's going to be on your lineup this weekend?
We have some great guests. The one I'm particularly pleased about is a young man named Liam Teague. I've known Liam for probably 10 or 15 years. He's, in my opinion, he's the world's greatest steel pan player. And you have to be very careful that you say steel pan because most people would refer to it as the steel drum, but steel pan players are very sensitive about it, and they want to be called steel pan players. And you think of steel pan as maybe an instrument of Jamaica,
yes.
Caribbean with the calypso music, but Liam takes it to a whole different level. He plays Bach. He plays does the Paganini perpetual motion.
He's called the Paganini of the steel pan.
That's what he's called, and I think that's a very, very good title. I mean, we had him rehearse with the band a few days ago, and their jaws literally dropped when they heard what he can do with this. Really, you know, it's just a beaten out old steel drum he makes wonderful music on it. He's played with the St. Louis Symphony. He's played with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra or the Chicago Civic Orchestra. He's played with a number of smaller orchestras, but he played recently with the New Orleans Orchestra. So, I mean, he's. I think the uniqueness of the instrument is one thing, but the fact that he plays it so well is just something to hear. And then a local favorite accordionist was from Siberia, lived in Siberia, Russian, who came to this country and has established himself in a lot of folk festivals around Madison, Sergei Belkin. And he's quite a virtuoso, too. He's won a number of prizes in Russia for his playing. So those two alone. And then we have some other local people who are going to play for us. John Shipper, a great trumpet player, and an evening of surprises.
As always.
We'll be delving into some of those surprises in CD form here shortly, too.
And this is not just a concert that you come for the listening. It's really a show, isn't it?
Well, it's a show in a lot of ways. First of all, the production probably will outdo what most people will anticipate. You think of a band concert rather staid, and we bring in professional lighting, we bring in professional sound people, and we have video screens that are showing the people, because the Cole Center is a large venue, so you can get to see really quite close-ups of the people. We use pyrotechnics. We use a lot of sparkly things that are shooting into the air, and it becomes quite a production. And then part of it is we've established quite a reputation for sort of crowd participation. We've pretty famous for a thing called the Fifth Porter,
sure,
where audience participates a lot, and we encourage that. We want the audiences to come in and enjoy being a part of the music and part of the show as well as watching it.
Well, is it a little different conducting or, let's say, rehearsing a band than it is to rehearse, say, an orchestra? I occasionally, in my commutes, would hear you out there on the field, you know, during practices, and instead of the orchestra, the ensemble, let's call it, being stationary in front of you, they're like ants. They're all over the place, and you're way up on this podium.
Right. Well, the marching band takes a whole different technique. Now, the concert that we're doing, it's really, as I say, what is the varsity band? It's the marching band sitting down. That's really, so that rehearsal is more like what you would do with a traditional orchestra. But on the football field, it's a totally different kind of situation. I mean, you're always facing the physical and the musical aspect of it, and you somehow have to combine those. And people, as you say, Norman, they're from the 5-yard line to the 5-yard line on a football field, and that's quite an expanse. So you have to communicate with them. They have to also find a means why they can stay with the pulse, because there is a sound delay.
Yeah.
And that much a difference if you think you're playing with the person that you're hearing on the other end. So you have to almost learn to play visually as much as musically in a lot of those situations. So, yeah, it's a whole different technique. I mean, I have to be more physical. I have to be more, I guess you'd say, aggressive, because I have to make sure everything is happening from the 5-yard line to the 5-yard line correctly.
I think of band directors in that situation not so much as conductors as generals.
That's a good. I like that analogy. That's it. You know, we feel like that a lot of times. And with generals, you got to have some sergeants and some lieutenants out there, and we've got good ones in the field too.
Have you done any arranging or composing for the music that's going to be on the program this weekend?
Well, I'm pleased to say that everything you're going to hear Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night is mine.
Wow.
It's been arranged over the course of the year. So, and one of the reasons is the band, our instrumentation is somewhat unique. We're very heavily brass oriented because of the outdoor aspect of it. And so, if you would take a band arrangement which uses a lot of clarinet, flutes, clarinets,
yeah,
and woodwinds, it just doesn't work outside. So, I've had to arrange all of the things. And then, this is such a specialized show, such a theatrical show, that I don't know that you could purchase anything that would be exactly. So what you're going to hear are all my arrangements, which it's nothing I did in the last couple of weeks. It's been a work since the beginning of the school year.
Well, it sounds like quite an impressive undertaking. We're going to follow you out onto the field here, though, with some of your more recent productions. And this intro, this was new to me until you mentioned just a minute ago, Mike, that Songs of the Wisconsin was actually by a classical composer, Louis Spohr.
He wrote the music, and it's in some of the old Wisconsin songbooks, and he's credited with the music in it. I can't recall off the top of my head who wrote the lyrics. It was no one who was particularly well known around Wisconsin, but it was a student or probably a faculty member adapted it to the Spohr music, and I don't know exactly what piece that it's taken from, because I'm not that familiar with his works, but it's been credited on all of the early songbooks. It's a very stately song. It's a song that at one point early in the history of the university was under consideration as the alma mater. Since then, varsity, of course, has replaced it in that role, but this was one, and the band sings it almost every performance, either before or after. It's sort of one of those camaraderie things that we sing to sort of pay tribute to the university and what we've been doing. So it's become a sort of a trademark of us, if not to the audience at whole, to ourselves internally.
Songs of the Wisconsin, our guest today, Mike Lecrone, leading the University of Wisconsin Marching Band. From the work of a Beethoven contemporary, Louis Spohr, but very much Wisconsin product now.
It is. It's a part of our traditions.
Now, do you audition for vocals when you audition your band members?
Well, they are forced into doing a lot of singing. The tradition of the band has always done a lot of singing, and that goes back to my predecessor, Ray Dvorak. He believed in having the band sing, and I picked up on it when he came in, and we've continued that. The band has, they have their own medley of Wisconsin songs. They call it Bascom Hill, and it lasts about 5 minutes, and everybody in the band learns it, and they sing it, you know, on trips at the drop of a hat, and sometimes they don't get started in the right key because they're instrumentalists, but they usually stay in the right key once they start.
A whole another set of challenges there.
Now, you're going to be celebrating on Wisconsin. It's the 100th anniversary.
It's a very special time for us because On Wisconsin was written in 1909. By a non-Wisconsin resident. He had never even been in Wisconsin.
You want to tell us what the original title was?
Well, he started writing it for a contest that was being sponsored by the University of Minnesota. So as I understand it, it was going to be called Minnesota, Minnesota. And his roommate was a man named Carl Beck, who was a former Wisconsin student, and he was a very strong advocate of Wisconsin, and he knew about a similar contest they were running here at the university, and he convinced William Purdy to allow Beck to write the words to On Wisconsin, and they submitted here. It became an instant favorite, and I think we're all very glad because I think we got the best of the deal on that.
And the neat thing is that contrary to persistent myth, we all own it. It's public domain. It doesn't belong to Paul McCartney or Michael Jackson.
Neither one. And I'm not sure that it ever did. I think it had passed before that rumor started. The way that started was I think Paul McCartney bought a catalog of music that had formerly been, that had been included in the catalog as the publisher. He bought the publisher's catalog. But before he really acquired it, I think it had gone into the public domain. And then he sold the same catalog to Michael Jackson, which then perpetuated the myth once again. So, yes, it belongs to the world now. It's ours.
Well, here's another piece that we wouldn't think of as being classical music. We think of it as being purely Wisconsin. And you mentioned Varsity as being the work originally of Charles Gounod.
That's correct. It's from one of his sacred works, and it's become, again, a part of the tradition. Everybody associates it with the University of Wisconsin and not Charles Gounod.
Gounod coda, you tell us there.
Yes, he did not write what we call the locomotive on the end.
John Philip Sousa had a quote about this song, called it the finest college marching song ever written.
I have used that quote many times because I believe it to be true. It's Ray Dvorak used to refer to On Wisconsin as the Wisconsin band's calling card, and he would say, after the first four notes, everybody knows who we are. And I think that's very true. That first little four-note motif.
Recognizable instantly.
You hear it, and as soon as you hear it, you know it's Wisconsin, and if it's a band, you're pretty sure it's the Wisconsin band.
Well, and it perks up your enthusiasm. It just sort of lifts the spirits right away. It's really a...
It was just a bit of genius, I think, on Purdy's part. He wrote a lot of other music. In fact, we're going to do one of his rags in my concert band that plays later in the semester. But he only wrote two that ever got any sort of publicity at all. And I think he was kind of a frustrated composer because he saw himself perhaps as another Scott Joplin, but just didn't have the genius that a Scott Joplin did. But that I'll settle for On Wisconsin.
Now, I've got to ask you a question about, again, having to do with the venues in which you play, in a sense. How connected are you to what's going on during a game? I mean, let's say a football game, for example, the band has to know something about what's going on with the game itself, but you must be so focused on the music that you can't be too well aware of what the score actually is from one second to the next.
Well, you know, it's gotten more and more demanding that you do, because in the game itself, particularly with the advent of television, which does every game now, has certain expectations for you to pick up the sense of the pageantry that's a part of college football.
So it's a live soundtrack.
That's right, mm-hmm. And you have to fit in with their schedule. So more and more, I find myself having to watch the game, watch the clock, and figure out if we get a timeout, what is the appropriate thing to play at this timeout. So it's, in a way, it's become a much bigger challenge. In the old days, you really could watch a little more of the game because, you know, when the time ran out for the first quarter, you could play a tune and then mm-hmm. It would be it. But that's not that way anymore. It's much more highly produced. So, in a way, it's kind of a challenge, but you're right. Sometimes I just like to sit back and say, can I just watch this game for a while and see what's going on? But the part of me that is involved with music finds it really challenging and stimulating to have to try to make it a part of the package that is either basketball or hockey or football or whatever the events that we play.
Speaking of watching games and basketball, I just have to ask you, graduated from Butler and went to graduate master's at Butler. Did you watch the game?
Oh, absolutely. I proudly graduated from there. And, you know, they had good basketball teams when I was there, but I think no alum ever expected them to be in that position. And though we would have liked to have won that game, like that last shot to have gone in, but it was still fun to see them at that elevated position. And certainly it's made Butler well known around the country right now.
Do you ever watch games and say, why are they playing that? They should be playing this, you know, piece of music here, you know?
Oh, I do that all the time. Yeah, I mean, I think we're all second guessers on this would be a better. And sometimes, I mean, I've dropped the ball, so to speak, a number of occasions where it needed something a little more spirited, and I had something called up that was a little more relaxed, and I thought, well, maybe I should have recanted a little bit and played something different at the last moment.
Well, speaking of something different, this is a familiar title with a very different spin provided by our guest today, Mike Leckrone. We're going to go all classical here, having heard from Spohr and Gounod, now Tchaikovsky. You want to give us a little gloss on how you approached the 1812 overture?
Well, I somewhat tongue-in-cheek introduce this when we play it at different concerts. I say this is the original version of 1812. Most people are familiar with the very wonderful overture that he wrote, but this is the original version that he wrote, and this was written when Tchaikovsky was a student at the University of Wisconsin, influenced by everything that happens on State Street and Camp Randall. So it does have a little bit of a Wisconsin flavor to it.
Didn't see that one coming, did you?
Arranged by Mike Leckrone.
Yes, I'll take blame for that.
That was a wonderful juxtaposition of the two melodies.
Makes me wonder what else you have up your sleeve, you know, for future projects.
Well, I'm always listening, and I always the great thing about On Wisconsin is it fits a lot of it fits in so well.
That little it did there, yeah. You get those the first couple of notes, yeah. And then
It just works. We also have a version of the Sprach Zarathustra that uses.
Really?
That would seem like a natural, wouldn't
yeah,
it? Yeah.
It works really well with it, too. So, and I'm still looking for other things that I can, I guess, desecrate.
Well, you know, every now and then when we're hearing something perfectly classical during the midday, I will turn to my co-host and say, ah, yes, and here we are on the 50-yard line, because there just are certain pieces that, you know, seem so natural.
Call me when you get I can always use help.
I'll start keeping a tab of that, Mike, and let you know.
Well, On Wisconsin is the featured guest, I would say, the featured music at the concerts this weekend, which are Thursday night the 15th, Friday night the 16th, and Saturday night the 17th at 7:30 p.m. at the Kohl Center in Madison. And Wisconsin Public Television is taping that, and they'll be rebroadcasting that program on May 8th. And if you'd like information, the web address is badgerband.com.
Correct.
All right, and we've been listening to how many CDs have you produced?
Well, we have three that we call, quote, studio CDs. Uh-huh. Studio means the stock pavilion. That's the only place I can house. But the acoustics there are
yeah,
great.
I think George Zell was one of the conductors who spoke very highly of the so-called Cow Palace acoustics.
And then we do a CD of our concerts, highlights from our concert each year. So we have about 8 or 10 of those still available of the concert CDs. But the three that we did in studio, so to speak, have been very popular for us.
And we've been listening to a couple of those during this half hour with our guest, Mike Leckrone.
Thank you very much for coming in.
My
it's
pleasure.
Been a real treat.
What is it about this, you know, breezy, sunny spring weather that makes us think, well, let's go to a band concert?
I like that idea.
All right.